Will the candidates for the degree of Doctor of Philosophy please rise? Ladies and gentlemen, in conferring this highest of academic degrees, it is our custom that over the shoulders of the candidates will be placed the Doctor of Philosophy hood bearing the colors of the University of Alaska. The diploma will be presented by Regent Hundorf and President O'Dowd, and the hood will be placed by Chancellor O'Rourke and the candidate's major professor. Professor Akosofu, will you please present Craig Daniel Fry? Craig Daniel Fry, Doctor of Philosophy degree, Space Physics, Bachelor of Arts, University of Hawaii, 1973, Master of Science, University of Colorado, 1979, Doctoral Thesis, Three-Dimensional Structure of the Heliosphere, Quiet Time and Disturbed Periods. He is escorted by his major professor, Dr. Soon Nakasofu. Professor Van Cleve, will you please present Terrence A. Moore? Terrence A. Moore, Doctor of Philosophy degree in Microbial Ecology, Bachelor of Science degree, Appalachian State University, 1970, Master of Science degree, Appalachian State University, 1972. Doctoral Thesis, Seasonal Fungal Biomass Dynamics in an Interior Alaska Paper Birch and Quaking Aspen Forest and Effects of Long-Term Fertilization. He is escorted by his major professor, Dr. Keith Van Cleve. Professor Burrell, will you please present Suzanne Frances Sugi? Suzanne Frances Sugi, Doctor of Philosophy degree in Chemical Oceanography, Bachelor of Arts, Oakland University in Michigan, 1970, Master of Science, University of Washington, 1975. Doctoral Thesis, Processes Controlling Trace Metal and Nutrient Geochemistry in Two Southeast Alaskan Fjords. She is escorted by her major professor, Dr. David Burrell. The candidates for the Doctor of Philosophy degree who were unable to be present today are John Philip Bryant, Ph.D. in Biology, Bruce C. Panuska, Ph.D. in Geology, Jack Peter Schwartz, Ph.D. in Biological Oceanography, Robert Joseph Sitka, Ph.D. in Geophysics, Lawrence Rediford Walker, Ph.D. in Ecology. Lieutenant Colonel Michael B. Ahern, Professor of Military Science, will present the candidate for United States Army Commission. Will the candidate for commission in the United States Army please rise and come forward?
President O'Dowd, upon the recommendation of the faculty of the Department of Military Science and approval of the President of the United States, I present to you this candidate for commissioning whose name is listed in the official program.
On behalf of the President of the United States, I have the honor of presenting you with your commission in the Army of the United States. You have been selected for this honor because special confidence is reposed in your fidelity, ability, and competence. To have merited this confidence is for you an achievement, and I charge you so to live and so to act that you may prove worthy of this distinction.
I will now administer the oath of office. Would you raise your right hand and repeat after me? I, and state your full name. Having been appointed an officer in the United States Army in the grade of second lieutenant, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office upon which I'm about to enter. So help me God. President O'Dowd will now present the commission to the candidate. Second Lieutenant Michael DeBlois, would you please come forward?
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to take a few moments to recognize Phi Kappa Phi, the Honor Society for the Land-Grant Institution. Phi Kappa Phi, from the Greek meaning, let the love of learning rule mankind. This Honor Society recognizes the superior scholarship in all academic disciplines. Undergraduate students are eligible if they are in the upper 10% of their class as seniors, and in the upper 5% of their class as juniors. Would all members of Phi Kappa Phi, faculty, graduate students, seniors, and juniors, please rise? Ladies and gentlemen, your Honor Society for the Land-Grant University. Really a good day, isn't it? Many of you are beginning to feel that sense of closure, possibly for the first time since you began your degree quest, thinking that it's just about over, that you can relax and take it easy for a while. It's good. You should enjoy the moment. You anticipate that I'm going to say something, right? Seriously, you deserve it because you have indeed reached a milestone in your life. For some of you, this achievement has come fairly easily. For others of you, I do see some gray hair under those mortarboards. It's been a bit of a struggle, long, tedious, difficult. Whatever the approach you've taken, enjoy the moment as a special one in your lives and understand that today we are here to honor you for a job well done. But also understand that this is a transient moment. A milestone is merely something that marks a point in a path, and it is not an end to anything, but rather this event and your years of effort that have preceded it are part of the very fabric of your life. At least that was our purpose, to bring about a web of knowledge and understanding that has not only contributed to your professional and specialized skills, but has given you a broader comprehension of the world with its scientific, philosophic, political, economic, and social interrelationships. Regardless of your field of expertise, these relationships will continue to impact your lives. And so part of your learning and educational process should have contributed to the continuing evolution of your own personal ethics, your own values, your very philosophy of life. Joan Kennedy, speaking last year at Manhattanville College in New York, observed that life is not only knowing what you want, but what you'll settle for. An interesting observation from a woman whose life has certainly been filled with much stress. A suggestion worth some exploration because it seems at first glance to suggest a compromising of principle. And if this is so, it bodes some real potential dangers to that ethical fabric that you have been formulating throughout your course of study and quest for knowledge. If this concept of settling is indeed part of the pragmatism of coping with life, then you need be alert to its existence, lest you settle too complacently, too timorously, too easily. Like the river against the bank or the wind on the hillside, this metamorphosis may occur ever so gradually and so imperceptibly, eroding the foundation of your values that you may not even perceive the mutation. And this is the real danger, that you may not be aware, that you may not understand that what you do on one hand may directly conflict with what you think you believe on the other, and that you won't recognize the conflict and force yourself to deal with it. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the potential tragedy. Interesting choices will present themselves to you. Choices that will test one set of values against the other, where a decision in favor of one direction will serve to weaken what you thought you believed. Oh, no, you say. Not me. My vision of the world is really solid and clear. My concept of right and wrong is good. Not to worry. Let's test the premise. What will you face? What philosophic conflicts will you deal with? We all enjoy Alaska's beauty, its openness, its freshness, and I think we all wish to see it retain these qualities. We want that untraveled trail, the clear water of the streams, the wildlife free to roam, the unspoiled vistas. But it seems we also want jobs, reasonably low consumer prices, motorized transportation, boats, planes, cars, snowmobiles, all using petroleum products, wood stoves burning fossil fuels. We want cabins in the woods with tin cans and plastic trash bags and other synthetic products. Is there a conflict of values there? In its extreme, I think there is. Industrialists on the one hand screaming, let us in, let us extract, let us develop. Environmentalists on the other hollering, no more, no agriculture, no mining, no development, no more people. What will you settle for? How much disturbance of the ecosystems? How little development? What is the balance? Can you in good conscience continue to espouse one philosophy while you live another? Your dilemma here is the classic one. You must understand and choose that delicate balance between your individual rights and the communal rights of society. And so, you engineers and scientists, listen to each other and understand. Present your information fairly and honestly. You humanists and artists, translate human values for them, so that we do not lose sight of one another in the struggle. You journalists and broadcasters in the class, will you resist the temptation to editorialize in your factual reporting? Will you expand the quotation in order to make page one? Will you go with the fast-breaking story before verifying all of the facts? If publishing, prepare yourself to withstand economic threat from major advertisers who did not like last Tuesday's editorial or last Saturday night's story on that one particular issue. In the academic environment, your choices have been relatively easy. There was a cloak of protection from the real world. The consequences of one action against the other have not yet fully represented themselves to you. Oh, yes, free speech, free press, long-standing constitutional basics in our society. Our founders fought for them. We accept them, or so we say, perhaps a little too tacitly, though. Some of you, as a result of your knowledge, drive, and abilities, will control fair amounts of wealth in any number of ways, business and industrial ownership, serving in the Alaskan legislature, your communities, local government. How will you use this power? Will you be the one threatening to withdraw economic support because of that editorial? Will you use political power or state or control of state or local resources merely to assure re-election, to win a few votes in your district by benefiting a few at the expense of the needs of all citizens? Will you equally represent those who didn't contribute to your campaign, as well as those who did? Will you respect the right of free dissent, or will you attempt to economically and politically bludgeon your critics into silence? It happens, unfortunately, with more regularity than you would care to know. But then, life is not only knowing what you want, but what you're willing to settle for. You teachers and social scientists keep us alert to these frailties. We all, of course, respect the dignity of human life, the equality of human beings, regardless of race or sex. But yet, we seem to tolerate poverty and hunger, perhaps starvation, both at home and abroad, with little thought or feelings of discomfort. Oh, occasionally in Ethiopia, with its dramatic pictures in the press, sparks our conscience. Otherwise, I guess if it's distant, we'll settle for it, even though I'm sure none of us particularly wants it. We, of course, accept equal employment opportunity and equal pay for equal work. But each time a member of a minority class or a female achieves a job or a promotion, does that suspicion linger that it wasn't on the basis of merit? How odd that the same questioning rarely occurs when a white male achieves the same goals. Racial, ethnic, and sexist jokes continue to prevail, maybe only in small groups, but oh, so many groups, occasionally causing some uneasiness, but rarely causing one to object, lest this displeasure lose one the support of his fellows, and so it is tolerated and tacitly spread. And if humor be viewed as representative of contemporary value systems, such acquiescence erodes the fabric of this value system. You women graduates, do you realize that regardless of your professional achievement, you can be a Rotarian but not a Rotarian? A Kiwi, but not a Kiwanian. A lioness, but not a lion. The same is true of the moose, the elks, the hedgehogs, whatever. You men, will you continue to tolerate it? Philosophic principles in conflict? Alaska is a state that prides itself on its individualism. Pioneering images, braving the Northland, political third party and independence party movements all contribute to this individualistic pride. At the same time, our demands upon the state are endless. Give me private enterprise, but subsidize my home mortgage, my small business loan, and the transportation system that I ride on. Give me clean air, but don't prevent me from idling my car in the parking lot for 30 minutes while I go in shopping. After all, I have a right to be warm at 40 below. Give me a fine university, but don't raise my fees and tuition. Rugged individualism at its best, I wonder. Even more contradictory is that voiced feeling you hear so often. What can I do? I'm only one person. If you succumb to this view, you have indeed succumbed to the epitome of the settling process and have defaulted indeed on your value systems. Much better that you say to yourself, until you believe it and until you actualize it, if it is to be, it is up to me. As a society, we do strive for equity and human dignity, but occasionally this evolution stalls. Frequently, our individual consciousness is slow to change. Recognize when the disparity between subtle behaviors and espoused philosophies are on divergent paths, and be willing to lead in correcting the course. Remember that all societal change began with the voice of a single individual, much like yourself, living somewhere on this globe. Mrs. Kennedy is probably correct in her view that part of knowing life is knowing what you'll settle for. But we hope that this university has provided you with a base of knowledge and understanding so that you may set your minimum threshold at the very highest level. If we have done our job well, and I hope we have, you will leave here today, regardless of your field of study, with a set of ethical principles resembling a diamond. Brilliant yet colorless. A precious stone of the hardest natural substance known to humankind. Such a gem will not erode easily. Rather, it is meant to grow in its brilliance. It is meant to last a very lifetime. It is meant to be taken out occasionally, so that others may see its fine qualities and seek to emulate them. I have no doubt, ladies and gentlemen of the class of 1985, that you are indeed made of such substance. If you were not, I don't think you would be here today. Look around now at your colleagues. Look around now at your faculty. Share your glow with them and catch the sparkle of theirs. Congratulations on your achievement, and thank you for a job well done. Your institution is proud of you.
Dean of Student Affairs, Harris W. Shelton, will introduce the speaker for the class of 1985.
Congratulations from me also. It's a pleasure and it's an honor to introduce to you your representative, Brian White. Brian graduated from Ben Allison High School and enrolled at the University of Alaska as a freshman the following fall. From the beginning of that freshman year in September of 1980, until now, Brian has continued to bring credit to the university through his generous service to students and to the campus community as a whole. He's been active in ASUA. He's been vice president of the student body, coordinator of legislative affairs, chairman of the trust fund. He's currently serving his third term on the Fairbanks campus assembly. He's been a patrol officer with the Department of Security, a student firefighter. And he's hiding down over there. Brian has earned his emergency medical technician certificate. He's qualified for ambulance responsibilities. He was just recently promoted to the grade of lieutenant in the fire hall, where he is currently. Brian graduated officially in December. He's also now enrolled in the MBA program in the School of Management. Brian, would you please come forward? And as he's coming up, Brian is well supported today. His mother, father, grandfather, and brother are all here. Would you stand, please, and be recognized?
Thank you very much, Dean Shelton. Well, we've come a very long way, and we've made it. and often envisioned day so far in the future has finally arrived. And this ceremony stands as a success and a tribute to our success. But that success is an accomplishment to be shared by everyone here and many others who could not be here. For if we are successful, it is because we have been surrounded by talent. Commencement is a time of thanksgiving to the faculty who have dedicated their lives to the pursuit of excellence. We owe an immeasurable amount of gratitude to the administration and the staff who strive to maintain the best educational environment that their often meager budgets will allow. We are also indebted. And most important, our everlasting love and gratitude and affection to our families, friends, and especially to our moms who are sharing their day with our commencement. Happy Mother's Day. Stanford University President Donald Kennedy traditionally opens the commencement address with the rhetorical question, is there life after Stanford? Well, I figure there must be because I've actually met some people from there. And you're probably thinking now that I'm going to jump into some parody on life after UAF. But I'm not going to do that. If I didn't think that there was a tomorrow, I probably wouldn't be standing before you today. When I woke this morning, I wasn't thinking about tomorrow, as I usually do, but about yesterday and the many yesterdays that make up the last several years. I thought about the things I'd learned, things I didn't learn, some things that I had to learn twice. And as I thought less and less about syllabuses, schedules, textbooks, and catalogs, and considered other things that were the products of sincerely dedicated and caring people, family, faculty, and friends, and this wonderful place that we affectionately call UAF. A lot of these things can't be taught, but they do have to be learned. And I'd like to briefly share them with you. And since brevity is the soul of all wit, as Shakespeare said, I will be very brief. You must possess faith in yourself and in your endeavors. I, for myself, have never acknowledged that the word defeat exists. One of America's truly great football coaches, Vince Lombardi, once said, winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while. You don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit. That means don't give up until you've accomplished something. And by virtue of your presence here today, I don't think I have to remind anybody of that. But never, ever give up. Even Babe Ruth struck out over 1,300 times before he set a record of 714 home runs. Never lose touch with your dreams. I think the great tragedy of growing up is that we begin to set limits for ourselves and start to ignore that sense of wide-ranging possibilities, of worlds to conquer, that thrives within us and drives us. Keep your dreams alive, regardless of your circumstances. And remember, a great man like Conrad Hilton began his career in hotels, pushing a broom. It's important to be decisive. All too often, we're taught to analyze, deliberate, research, study, consider, and deliberate some more, but never to make a decision. Decisiveness is one of the most admirable of human qualities. And I think the most decisive person that I can think of was John Wayne. He was pragmatic and yet resolute, and probably the most graphic example of this trait occurred in one of his movies. Picture the Duke riding along on his horse, drinking heavily from a flask, and following behind him were a young lady and a young man. He eventually passed out and fell off his horse, landing on the ground. Now, usually when great leaders make fools of themselves, they'll either try to cover it up or, better yet, blame it on somebody else. The Duke, of course, rose above that. He looked up at the two young people, assessed the situation, and robustly stated, "We'll camp here." Finally, don't take yourselves too seriously. It's good to laugh once in a while at your circumstances and at yourself. Believe me, it'll keep you human. We've been reminded of our obligations. But as graduates, each of us shares one very special obligation, from the accountants to the engineers and to the biologists. We needed the education that we came here for, and very soon it will need us. By virtue of our accomplishments, we are the standard bearers of the most educated society our planet has ever known. And it is our responsibility to preserve that, and when the day becomes necessary, to possibly fight for it. One of the principles as taught in the School of Management is that the priorities of any organization are usually expressed by where it budgets its money. And it's going to be up to us in the many years to come to ensure that the preservation of education remains our state's and our nation's highest priority. Because when you cut educational funding, you cut society's throat. And whether we are the ones who influence the policymakers or someday become the policymakers ourselves, we must never forget this obligation. And of course, it will be worth it. John Wayne said it best. In his final days, while he was waging the biggest battle of his life with dreaded cancer, he said, "The most important thing is the fight and the challenge, because there is no cancer of the soul." And we come to that point in every speech now, where we reach a conclusion, mercifully so. And instead of reading you my conclusion, I'm going to read to you a very short excerpt from a letter I received the day before yesterday from my grandmother. She said, "We all can dream, and by reaching for that dream, we can make a difference. Regardless of what we attempt to do, we must have enthusiasm. We learn to measure the things in life not by quantity, but by quality. Moments held precious, friends held dear, beliefs held sacred, and a child held near. Let's not survive the remaining years of our lives. Let's fulfill our dreams and live them. When we came into this world, we all cried helplessly, and we will leave this world with the very same helplessness. And what we do with the time we've been given here is what makes us individuals. Thank you very much, and I wish each and every one of you people the very best forever you could hope for. Thank you."
There are times when a university has within its ranks persons who upon retirement merit special recognition for services they have rendered. Today is one of those times. Will the person receiving emeritus recognition today please stand? President O'Dowd, I present this candidate to you for the conferring of emeritus rank.
You have served the University of Alaska Fairbanks for at least 10 years, have reached the rank of full professor, and have been recommended by the Campus Promotion Committee, by the dean of your school, and by your chancellor. By virtue of the authority vested in me by the Board of Regents, I confer upon you the rank of Professor of Animal Science, Emeritus.
The full resolution for the recipient will be found printed in the official commencement program. Will Arthur L. Brundage, please come forward. Also receiving emeritus recognition but unable to be with us today is Dr. R. Parthasarathi, Professor of Physics Emeritus.
In conferring honorary degrees upon distinguished individuals, the University of Alaska is itself honored. Today, the presence of three outstanding Alaskans, as well as our distinguished commencement speaker, makes this a most memorable occasion. The complete citations accompanying the degrees are printed in your commencement program. Chancellor O'Rourke, will you please present Robert Kogo? Robert Kogo has worked all his life to preserve the linguistic heritage of the Haida people of southeastern Alaska. An expert in the written and spoken forms of the language, he spent 12 years compiling the first complete Haida dictionary. Through his writing and translations, Robert Kogo has helped to keep Haida mythology, history, customs, and legends alive. By virtue of the authority vested in me as President of the Board of Regents under the Constitution of the State of Alaska and upon the recommendation of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Letters with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto. Chancellor O'Rourke, will you please present Jonathan Motzfeldt? A champion of the people of Greenland, Premier Jonathan Motzfeldt has dedicated his life to the service of the citizens of the now self-governing island. He served in the Greenland Provincial Council and the Commission for Home Rule for Greenland as the island nation prepared for home rule. After earning a degree in divinity from the University of Copenhagen, Jonathan Motzfeldt returned to Greenland. He served 13 years as a clergyman in southern Greenland. In 1979, the Queen of Denmark, Her Majesty Margrethe II, recognized Jonathan Motzfeldt's dedication by awarding him a knighthood of the Dannebrog. In 1982, his knighthood was confirmed to be of the First Order. As a member of the Comité Arctique, Jonathan Motzfeldt has worked to strengthen ties among the peoples and nations of the Arctic. By virtue of the authority vested in me as President of the Board of Regents under the Constitution of the State of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto. Chancellor O'Rourke, would you please present Rosamond Weller? For 37 years, Rosamond Weller educated the children of Fairbanks as a teacher. She pioneered the primary phonetic program, non-grade primary education, and parent-teacher conferences. She gave the same energy to her adopted community of Fairbanks, which she has called home since 1934. A talented musician herself, she has enthusiastically participated in orchestras, bands, and choirs. She is a leader and advocate of music programs in the elementary schools of Fairbanks. By virtue of the authority vested in me as President of the Board of Regents under the Constitution of the State of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Humanities with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto. Lovely flowers and gift being presented to Ms. Weller are from all the students and staff of Rosamond Weller Elementary School. Making the presentation is Miss Kathy Bateman. Chancellor O'Rourke, will you please present Don Young? Don E. Young arrived in Alaska shortly after statehood and began serving the people of the 49th state as an elementary school teacher in Fort Yukon, where he taught for 10 years. It was there that he began his political career by serving first on the city council and then as mayor for a four-year term. In 1966, he was elected to the Alaska House of Representatives, where he served until 1970, when he was elected to the Alaska Senate. Elected to the United States House of Representatives in 1973 and reelected six times since, Don Young has been a tireless defender of Alaska's frontier lifestyle. By virtue of the authority vested in me as President of the Board of Regents under the Constitution of the State of Alaska, I confer upon you the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws with all the rights, privileges, and honors pertaining thereto.
Before concluding this program today, may I extend a most cordial invitation to everyone present to attend the alumni reception, which will be held in the upper lounge of the Lola Tilley Commons immediately following these exercises. The 63rd commencement exercises of the University of Alaska Fairbanks will close with the singing of Alaska's flag by the Choir of the North and a benediction by Lindsay L. Biddle. Following the benediction, the audience will please be seated until the recessional of faculty and graduates is completed. Please stand for Alaska's flag.
Koyana, and congratulations. We now enter the real world with the words of Pope John Paul II. Listen not to voices which speak the language of hatred, revenge, retaliation. Follow not leaders who train you in ways of inflicting death. Rather, love life, respect life in yourself and in others. Amen.
Six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20! I would like to thank my parents, my grandparents. All right. Plug in recorder and turn on. If desired, plug headphone, listening center, or extension speaker into speaker phone output, or accessory amplifier into line output 4. Snap cassette in cassette well. Set index. Mass here. I've forgotten my reading material, so that would be a little bit hard. But I think I can remember how to count. One. No, let's see. Let's do Mary Had a Little Lamb. Her fleece was white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, her lamb was sure to go. It followed her to school one day, which was quite against the rule. I can't believe I've almost forgotten this. Quite against the rule. So she got detention and 40 spankings. Let's see. Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. Jack jumped over a candlestick. I can't remember the rest of that one either. I'm getting old. I don't know what else to say, so I'll just kind of ramble a little bit. Okay. Plug in recorder and turn on. Plug microphone into microphone line input and audio cable from the PA, radio phone, or other source of line input. Snap cassette in cassette well. Set index counter to 000. Push and hold in record button. Then depress green start button. Recording level is set automatically. if manual switch is set to auto position. If set to manual, set volume so that VU meter needle fluctuates mostly in the yellow zone. Tape may be stopped momentarily or held for cueing by pulling back pause lever. While in play or record module, pull back and move lever to the right. If locking is desired, push left to release. Tape is rewound or advanced rapidly by holding high-speed lever in direction of desired tape travel until the desired number of reach is reached on the index counter. When finished playing a recording, push the stop button. If recording, record circuit is automatically disconnected. When tape comes to an end or malfunctions, the play key releases automatically. Pull back eject button to pop up cassette for easy removal. This is kind of worse than reading a biology book, you know.
Oh, yeah. I think we're set, though, because no matter how hard... Test, one, two, test. Hey, test, test. We're not going to be feeding back. Test, one, two, testing. Test, test. I think we're ready. If they come up here and yell and scream, at least... Back.
They won't be yelling and screaming. They will be yelling and screaming.
Have you seen this cutesy little podium?
That's cool. Light.
Yeah. In case it's too tall for you. Too short. Pretty fancy schmancy, huh?